From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up today on the show, we're going to have a conversation with Democratic Representative Patrice Arendt, founder of the Utah Clean Air Caucus, a bipartisan group of lawmakers aiming to address Utah's air quality problems.
Many legislators are doing this because of, I would say most legislators, because of constituents that are coming to them and saying, we want you to do what you can. Now, are we going to solve the problem overnight? Absolutely not. But if we don't start working at this, if we don't do some really important things, it'll only get worse, and we know that.
And speaking of air quality, we'll revisit this weekend's clean air rally at the state capitol, which drew thousands of people. All that and more just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. But first, these messages and access downtown. And thanks again for tuning in to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later on the show, we'll have a conversation with Representative Patrice Arendt about the bipartisan legislative group she founded, the Clean Air Caucus. But first up, we have these headlines. Speaking of air quality, a rally for clean air at the state capitol drew close to 5,000 people on Saturday. Dr. Brian Mensch, founder of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment and one of the principal organizers of Saturday's rally, said that the time has come for Utahns and their lawmakers to take air pollution seriously.
Air pollution tarnishes our community reputation. It erodes our quality of life and stifles our economy as much as it does our lungs. Even more, this is a public health urgency. And it's an urgency for everyone, not just for sensitive groups.
Mensch was one of a number of speakers who, over the course of more than 2 hours, rallied the crowd that had assembled on the Capitol steps and South Lawn, demanding action to address the state's air pollution problems.
Lives are crippled and lost from strokes, heart attacks, pneumonia, and cancer. The lives of children are the most affected, and it is our profound moral obligation to protect those that cannot protect themselves.
Speakers ranged from Cherise Udell of the Utah Moms for Clean Air, who read from a petition.
For the sake of our health, well-being, and quality of life and economic future, we, the undersigned, hereby demand meaningful and immediate actions.
To Democratic Representative Joel Briscoe of Salt Lake, who asked the assembled crowd to help create a mandate for political action.
Will you promise me that you will register to vote, that you will vote in November 2014, and that you will vote for clean air?
A whitish layer of air pollution blanketed the valley below the protesters, and many of those gathered carried signs with phrases like "greatest smog on earth" or "Utah life asphyxiated." The event came 2 days before the start of the legislative session, and a recurring theme was a call to citizens for political engagement. Many a satirical song was sung during the rally, including this one written by fourth graders at Salt Lake's Whittier Elementary.
Aversion outside is frightful, and clean air would be delightful. This problem is not a joke. Makes us choke.
But there were also more serious anthems, like the earnest "Governor, We Cannot Breathe" by folk singer Tom Bennett.
Oh, Governor, we cannot breathe. Oh, Governor, we cannot breathe. You got it?
Longtime KSL news anchor Dick Norris spoke at the event, saying that he became especially concerned about pollution after his recent fight with lung cancer.
If you can see the air, if you can taste the air, and if it burns when you go outside, chances are that damn air is bad. I don't care if it's moderate. Don't give me a moderate day. Don't give me an unhealthy day. Just stop. Just stop it.
The legislative session begins on Monday, and lawmakers are expected to consider several bills related to air quality. But whether those proposals are accepted, and whether they meet the standards of those who spoke at Saturday's rally, well, only time will tell. And we just heard from the speakers and musicians leading Saturday's air quality rally. Now let's hear from a few of the thousands of attendees. KCPW's Ryan Cunningham roamed through the crowd on the Capitol's South Lawn to find out what motivated people to get involved in this issue. Here now is his report.
Bicycles, signs, and families. A wealth of those three things could be found all throughout the multitudes. Bicycles because many in attendance wanted to minimize the environmental impact of the event. But as Aaron Kruger of Sugar House points out, riding a bike on bad air days isn't always feasible. Occasionally, he has to borrow a respirator from the ceramics class he teaches in West Valley.
It's nasty. The other day I was digging the skate park out and I had to use a respirator to make the taste go away. I don't know if it got the small particles.
Many attention-seeking signs dotted the crowd, all lambasting Utah's air quality in more or less unique ways. Perhaps none were as poetic as Owen's and Charlie's signs.
There once was some smoggy brown air. For some reason, it didn't seem fair. We called all the factories to shut their smog hatcheries, then they could show that they care.
And when did you write that?
Just this morning.
This morning?
Yes.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah, I can do mine.
Do you have one too?
Yes, it's on the basketball.
I'm 6 years old. I need clean air.
Straight to the point. Very good. Which takes us to that third element, families. Matt Keating moved his family to Salt Lake from Southern California 2 years ago. He says he didn't know air quality was this big of a problem in Utah.
We lived in Northern California, we lived in Southern California, and even in Southern California, I mean, the air here is so much worse than Southern California.
In fact, if conditions don't improve, Keating says he might relocate his family again.
You know, I don't want to move these kids around too much, but in the next few years, if it doesn't get better, we might move. Actually, if one of our kids actually develops asthma, granted they can develop asthma for a number of reasons, but if they develop asthma, we're out of here.
Jeff Stoll already has asthma, a condition he attributes to the air in Utah. An Ironman triathlete, he developed asthma after moving to Utah and training for his first Ironman. Stoll says it wouldn't be economical for him to move now, but he may consider moving after retiring.
I love Utah, the mountain biking, the road biking, the mountain biking, the skiing, cross country, downhill, backcountry, it's all wonderful. But the air, you still gotta breathe when you do all of those things.
Of course, Salt Lake Valley isn't the only place in Utah afflicted by the inversion. Cache Valley in northern Utah sees air quality conditions equally as unhealthy. Jacqueline and Tony Lowry drove an hour and a half to attend Saturday's rally. They've been active in pushing for better air quality, and with good reason. A couple members of the family have experienced worsened respiratory problems.
I have asthma. My son seems to have similar sensitivities, so there's a lot of indoor time, but we're also outdoor enthusiasts. We love to be outdoors, so it's a really difficult situation.
Jacqueline says her family wouldn't have moved to Utah if they had known about the extent of the inversion problem. Especially considering some of the ill health Jacqueline has endured.
Well, when I first moved here 7 years ago, I only had a very slight level of asthma, very exercise-induced kind of thing that would only happen under very stressful or high-active moments. But through the years, it became just during the inversions. But now I have year-round asthma, and I have to use an inhaler. And I'm worried that it's going to progress, and I'm worried for my children.
Kent Burningham came to the rally wielding a large American flag. He's lived in Utah for almost three decades, and he thinks part of the problem has been lack of leadership on the issue.
We have a very trusting community here, and most of the people in the majority of this state really rely on their leaders to give them direction. Our leaders have not been very aggressive about individual health issues or other personal issues.
Still, Burningham is hopeful that change could come about this year.
There comes a time when people begin to communicate with each other laterally and make their decisions based on their experiences instead of waiting for information from above on what to do. And our community is getting more tolerant of individual expression and diversity. I think that this is going to roll.
With thousands of concerned citizens and perhaps many more safely at home, this may be a year of thinking laterally. In Salt Lake City, I'm Ryan Cunningham for KCPW News.
We'll hear more about this issue a bit later on during our feature interview with Representative Patrice Arendt. But now we turn to our recap of the day's legislative session with Marianne Martindale of the good government group Alliance for a Better Utah. Marianne, today was day one at the state legislative session. So what happens on day one and what in particular were you following?
Oh, day one is a lot of ceremony. There's a lot of formality to what they do on day one. So every day one, so the House and the Senate each have their own time. It happens at the same time, so you can only go to one. I typically pick the House. It's a little bit more interesting. There's a lot more people. There's a lot more chance that something kind of funny will happen. And the Senate tends to be a little more staid. So the House has a little bit more levity. So it starts with a prayer. Every floor session starts with a prayer. One thing that I think people don't understand, it's not typically just a Mormon prayer. I mean, this could be a prayer from any denomination, or even sometimes it's a non-denominational. Today's was given by David Litvak, who's the former minority leader of the House. He's no longer in the House. He resigned his last term. And he's Jewish, so he gave a Jewish prayer, a very traditional Jewish prayer and a thought. And then they do, you know, the flag, of course, comes in with the standard bearers. And they sing the national anthem, and they do the Pledge of Allegiance. Right. And then sometimes they'll have someone present something. Today they had a local group called Salt City something. I don't remember what the something was. But they sang two songs. The first one was Hold On to What You Believed, Mumford & Sons. And this is all a cappella, so it doesn't sound like anything that you've ever heard on the radio. And the second one was the one that got sort of ironic chuckles from not only the gallery, but also from the House floor itself. And it was Blue Skies, which is, you know, funny considering all of our air quality talk. But it was funny. It was definitely ironic. And the speaker, the first thing she said was, maybe that's wishful thinking on their part.
And speaking of the speaker, she actually opens the session, right? She gives opening remarks. Is that right?
Yeah, it's sort of like a State of the House speech, if you will. You know, this is her chance, just as in the Senate, President Wayne Niederhauser would be doing the exact same thing. So our speaker is Becky Lockhart from Utah County, and she stands up and she gives a speech. Typically in this, they kind of talk about what they think their platform is going to be for the session, what they'd like to see, maybe important issues that they think need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. This was a little different, and it was interesting. It had the Twitterverse all abuzz. It was pretty much a I'm running for governor in 2016 speech.
A very political speech.
Very political and very pointed towards the governor, which, and like I said, you don't typically see this kind of thing. Most of the time it's really very, a lot of formality, a lot of pro-education, pro-our children, pro-family values. And it's just kind of, it's a lot of rhetoric.
Right.
But this was pretty pointed, and she went after Governor Herbert pretty hard. She even said that. She even commented, you know, I'm kind of going after the governor here. But
she didn't announce yet a run for governor, that she's, to be clear,
no,
she hasn't announced
yeah.
that she's running for
no,
governor.
No, it was everything but announcing.
I mean, were there specific issues that she was taking the governor to task for?
Yeah, she talked about the lack of leadership at the top of the government, which is specifically Governor Herbert. She also talked about Medicaid, which was interesting. So just a few days ago, finally, everyone's been waiting for so long and working on Medicaid expansion. Governor Herbert came out and said, yes, we need to do something. Now, it was a very, very soft endorsement. He didn't support any particular way of taking Medicaid expansion. But he said, we can't turn our backs on these people. We know that something has to be done.
And what he said, and this is during his monthly news conference, he said that taking nothing was off the table.
Off the table,
and
there
are other states like Arkansas and Iowa that have taken a partially
yeah,
privatized.
There's some different models that you can follow. And I think most people that have been watching this realize Utah's, they're not going to take just full Medicaid expansion. Probably some kind of model on it. But it was interesting, and this is where the speaker, surprisingly, because she hasn't really said a whole lot about Medicaid expansion in the past. She's railed against Obamacare a couple of times, but she said Medicaid expansion should be sent back to Washington, stamped return to sender.
Wow.
So that's a pretty deep line in the sand between her and the governor. And that was another one where everyone was like, well, that's a very political statement to be making on the heels of the governor just saying just two or three days ago that Medicaid expansion had to be on the table. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to cause some really interesting policy discussions during the session, no doubt.
Marianne Martindale, Executive Director of the Good Government Group Alliance for Better Utah. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And now on the rundown, we're going to turn to a conversation with Representative Patrice Arendt of Mill Creek. Arendt is one of the founders of the bipartisan Clean Air Caucus, a new group on the Hill this year, focused on lawmaking that will address Utah's air quality woes. Lawmakers are understandably busy this time of year, but she made some time to speak with me over the weekend at a cafe in her home district. You founded this Clean Air Caucus among lawmakers. It's a bipartisan group. Over the weekend, we had an air rally, a clean air rally, and I'm wondering what kind of effect the rally will have, or if it will have an effect, on lawmakers during this legislative session.
I think lawmakers certainly are paying attention to everything going on with clean air, including the rally, which, in my experience, was the largest rally I have ever seen at the state capitol. It was a wonderful group of people, and it wasn't your kind of typical folks that you always find at a rally. I saw grandmothers and little kids and people from all walks of life so concerned about air quality. But I think the rally is just indicative of what's really going on in our community. You can't turn on the TV without hearing a story in every newscast about air quality. You can't turn on the radio without hearing about air quality. Every newspaper I read has a story about air quality, and everywhere I go, people want to talk about it. I'm getting more email now about air quality than education. And that's never happened before in all of the years I've been on the Hill.
It's obviously an extremely important issue, but does all of this focus on one issue, one or two issues, detract from momentum you might have towards other bills at this upcoming session or other issues?
You know, there are always important issues every session, and we can never just focus on one. There's so many important things that we do at the legislature that does it detract? No. Am I working on other bills? Yes. Am I focusing on other things also? Of course I am. This is taking a lot of effort, and this is important to people, and I think it's just reaching the tipping point where people are actually demanding that we do something. And it's business leaders who've been working on this for years. I mean, the Chamber of Commerce. It's AARP that created a clean air task force among their own group because they're sick of hearing seniors stay inside on bad days.
There's a package of 16 bills being presented that are all clean air bills. And I think people want to know if these bills, if they'll have any teeth. Maybe you can highlight some of the bills that are the most powerful among those.
The problem is a lot of them aren't drafted yet. And I'll use one of mine as an example. I am working with Representative Jim Nielsen and Representative Ed Redd on the wood-burning smoke issue. We've had a variety of meetings. It is a priority bill of mine, so it should get high ranking in terms of getting this drafted because of the way our system works, but it's not drafted yet. So nobody in the caucus could endorse it. Nobody in the caucus could say they like it or not because they haven't had a chance to read it yet. I think it's going to be a very important bill given the information we found out about the impact of wood smoke on inversions. So I think that's going to be an important bill. Some of the bills are going to be very expensive. And I think we need to decide what's the most expensive thing for our state to be doing. Is it to be paying all these health care costs for people who are going to be sick because of bad air? Is it going to be losing businesses or employees that won't stay here because of our poor air? I think that's a lot more expensive than the cost of these bills. But when you think about, for example, getting the 170 dirtiest school buses off the road, that's expensive. If you think about getting some of the cars off the road, that's expensive. If you think about trying to put natural gas in some of the homes that use wood as their sole source, that's going to cost some money. Some of these bills are going to be free and are going to also be important. One, to help create an infrastructure for electric vehicles will cost less than the bill that will provide a tax incentive for people to purchase them. Both, of course, are very important part of the big picture. There's just not one bill that's going to solve this problem. There are lots and lots of bills that are looking at different things. One piece of legislation will just take a line out of the Utah Code that says that we cannot pass laws that are more strict than the EPA. What does that mean? It means that Utah can have specific solutions for our problems and not have to just use what the EPA gives us in terms of their limits. We're different geographically than other places, and we need to be able to do what works best here and not have the federal government necessarily dictating.
At this rally, there were groups like the Utah Moms for Clean Air calling for very kind of dramatic action, like a moratorium on the construction of new highways and for standards for diesel trucks. What they're doing is they have a petition that they're getting people to sign to try and bring pressure on the legislature. Is there an appetite for that, or does that kind of pressure work?
I think it's important for all of the interest groups to be out there educating people and having those folks contact the legislature. We won't necessarily be able to use all of their ideas this session. Some of them we might adopt now, some we might adopt later, some may not work for a variety of reasons, but I think having that input is always helpful from a variety of organizations. I'm getting great ideas from people who have emailed me.
You know, when the legislative session rolls around, we often hear that this is a weather problem and then it will just kind of not go anywhere after that. Do these bills stand a chance, I guess?
I think so. And yes, in part it's a weather issue, but when you have an inversion, you've got a cap on the valley. The more you put in, the dirtier it's going to get. So we need to put less in. And also we have different issues in other parts of the state. But I do think that there is an appetite among legislators to make changes this year. You've certainly seen people from leadership on both sides of the aisle talking about this, working together. And I do think we will have meaningful action this year. And I think having the public provide input is very, very helpful because many legislators are doing this because of constituents that are coming to them and saying, we want you to do what you can. Now, are we going to solve the problem overnight? Absolutely not. But if we don't start working at this, if we don't do some really important things, then it'll only get worse, and we know that.
So What about transportation infrastructure, transportation in general, how we fund transportation and putting money into mass transit, for example?
You know, one of the things our local governments have asked for is the authority to put on the ballot the issue of raising the sales tax just a little bit to pay for mass transit. So they'd have to have a vote of the people supporting that. And to me, that makes a lot of sense. You know, we are here very close to a bus stop. But to try and get from my neighborhood to the University of Utah, unless you take that rush hour bus in the morning, it takes an hour and a half. And it's a 15-minute drive. So we need a better system of mass transit. We've put out great tracks, but we need buses to feed into it. We need a much more user-friendly mass transit system. And the more we get people out of cars, the better. But that's part of it. We need to get more people into carpooling. We need to have more teleconferencing. We need to have a better infrastructure for our electric vehicles, because when people go out and buy an electric vehicle, often it only has an 80-mile range. What does that mean? They need a place to charge. And you know, the private sector and local governments have stepped up. They said, we're going to put in charging stations. A lot of them are going to put in rapid chargers. There's a cost to that. And they want to ask the person who's plugging in to pay a little bit towards that, a small fee. Under the current Utah law, they could be declared as a public utility because they are selling electricity. That's a problem. So we've already gotten a change in terms of rule through the Public Service Commission, but we need to solidify that in the Utah Code. That if somebody is doing something that would, for example, the grocery store down the street is just selling electricity, they are not suddenly subject to all of the rules and regulations of the Public Service Commission. That bill was recommended by the Economic Development Task Force and then went to interims to the Public Utilities Committee and was passed unanimously there. So I anticipate that bill will pass.
Maybe you could tell me about the proposal, which is a bill to have a new sustainability director of sustainability for the state.
As a result of legislation that passed unanimously last year, we asked the largest employer in the state of Utah, that is state of Utah government, to give us a report about what every agency in all three branches are doing to clean up our air. And we had a lot of reports on what they were doing, what they would like to be doing in the future. And some of the agencies are doing some great things. Some of the agencies aren't doing as much. But one of the things we realized is there was no one in state government sharing these best practices. So then I looked at the private sector and thought, what's the model from the private sector? And we realized most big companies have a sustainability director who will actually help coordinate this. It's not only good for the environment, but it's also good for their bottom line. And so that's what this proposal is to have somebody in state government to share these best practices.
What about the idea that voluntary measures are enough?
Cleaning up our air cannot be done by voluntary measures alone. We absolutely have a role. It is critical that the Utah legislature pass meaningful legislation, and some of those things are going to be expensive. Some of those bills are going to require changes in the code, and that's what's going to need to happen if we're going to clean up our air.
Representative Patrice Aron, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate having this opportunity.
That was Democratic Representative Patrice Arendt of Mill Creek talking about air quality issues. You can find this conversation and all of our past programs at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. You're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And that's full time for our show today. The Rundown was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Tyler Ford, and Ryan Cunningham. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow, tune in for your headlines and more coverage from the state legislature. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at @KCPWRundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.